Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Becca Brown. Becca Brown is usually the engineer, but Hello. She's also a reporter for Local Talk. Hello, Becca.
Hi.
And hello to you, the listeners. I'm thrilled to have Becca today as my co-host. Let's start with the weather, Becca, as far as I understand. In a word, snow.
Yep, lots of snow going on today. Got some patchy blowing snow is predicted after 1 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be sunny with a high near 21. However, wind chills can go down as low as negative 25. It is windy, with winds increasing to 17 to 22 miles an hour in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles an hour. Tonight, there will be more patchy blowing snow before 4 a.m., so if you're lucky to have insomnia, you have a lot to look forward to. And there'll be a low of around negative 9 degrees. Wind chills as low as negative 25. Windy and gusty winds as high as 32 miles an hour. Tomorrow, Thursday, will be sunny and cold. Beautiful combination with a high near 1 degree. Wind chill values as low as negative 30. On Friday, snow is likely. Cloudy with a high near 15. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches is possible. And Friday night, there will be a 40% chance of more snow. Cloudy with a low of negative 2. Saturday, we have a 50% chance of snow. Mostly cloudy with cold atmospheres and lovely winds. High as near as 5 degrees. Saturday night, a 50% chance of snow. Cloudy with a low of negative 2. Sunday, a 30% chance of snow. Cloudy and cold with a high near 9. Yeah, lots of snow.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Becca. Yesterday, the Council on Sustainability had its third annual Sustainapalooza event at the Memorial Union Great Hall. This is an event that focused on green and sustainable initiatives, accomplishments, and opportunities at Iowa State and in the Ames community. And Becca, as I understand, you were presenting there?
As one of the school garden coordinators, our table was on urban gardening. So we had vermicomposting, and we were utilizing glass jars as makeshift potting pots, you know, to get students to see that, you know, you can think outside the box when it comes to growing things in your dorm or small apartment.
And in what capacity, again, were you there?
I was presenting as a school garden coordinator, my job as an AmeriCorps Vista. Me and one other school garden coordinator work at the Volunteer Center of Story County.
Okay.
Otherwise.
Well, can you describe a little bit what Sustainapalooza is?
Yeah, Sustainapalooza is a companion event to the annual Symposium on Sustainability, offering a very interactive and activity-based opportunities for students, faculty, and staff to increase awareness and to engage the community in sustainable initiatives, events, and opportunities on campus in the Ames area. The event includes a sustainability poster session highlighting campus and community initiatives, accomplishments, and opportunities related to sustainable living. There was 4 interactive Green It Yourself centers featuring topics of green transportation, upcycling, waste diversion opportunities, and urban gardening, and also sustainability-themed giveaways. Sustainapalooza was preceded by a public lecture by Alan Weisman. This was a collaborative event sponsored by the Green Umbrella Student Organization and the Live Green Initiative and the Council of Sustainability. And there seemed to be a lot of people come to our table, so I talked a lot about worms.
Is there anything that you would like to say about worms before we...
Worms are awesome. Everyone should do vermicomposting. If you don't know what that is, you should let me know, and I will tell you all about it.
And you can be reached at the Volunteer Center at Story County.
Gardens@vcstory.org.
Repeat that.
Gardens, G-A-R-D-E-N-S, at vcstory.org.
Cynthia McClure, who is also a reporter for KHOI, was also at the event, and she made some recordings of interviews with various people attending the conference. Let's listen to that now.
I'm Allie Straube, and I'm the Director of Sustainability for Iowa State's Government and the Student Body. Right now, we're having a symposium showing all the different sustainable things going around Iowa State's campus, presented in a poster-style fashion. My poster is about all the different projects that the Government and the Student Body is doing regarding sustainability. So one of our main projects is starting a recycling program in the library, in Parks Library. Also, we have started a bike share program with industrial design students. Right now, they're designing them, I think, from scratch to start a new program. Also, we have implemented bike pumps on campus so people can fill up their bikes' tires, and also are starting a swap site for students and faculty and staff. So you can go in between, like for books and tickets and furniture, so that keeps them out of the dump.
So these are upcycled materials that people can reuse from year to year so that they just don't end up in a landfill.
Yes, it's pretty much, it's like a Craigslist of solely Iowa State, so people feel more comfortable within the community knowing it's a student or a member of faculty or staff. There's already multiple Facebook pages doing the same thing, so we thought putting in a collective site that's backed by the government student body would be a really good resource.
I'm Letitia Kennemer. I'm the Fine Arts Coordinator at the Memorial Union, and I work at the workspace as well. And today we are recycling small containers, like sour cream containers or empty glass jars from food that are clean, and they can be used for small planters, either for starter plants, or really you could use them for any kind of like pencil holder or whatever too.
So these are upcycled materials?
Yeah, this one has like a jute rope around it. This one's double upcycled because we used it as a paint cup first. So it's got some cool paint splatters, and then some kite string and some extra fabric. So, yeah.
There's quite a few students doing this.
Yeah, we just opened, so we hope to do a whole bunch. We have a whole table of containers, so hope lots of people take part. And then they can go to the other side of the room and actually get the soil and plant a seed if they want to. So, full circle.
Nice. Thank you.
My name's Chris Turner.
My name is Kevin Bergeron.
Both of us are employees of Outdoor Recreation, which is a division of Recreation Services. And recently we opened up a division of Outdoor Recreation where we're doing minor repairs for students on their bikes so that we can promote green traveling around campus and everybody can bike year-round.
Because students don't have that ability to fix their bikes, so they just ditch them?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they ditch them on campus, and actually every over break, the university sends an email out and says, hey, if your bike's here, we're going to cut it off and keep it. So that happens more often than you think.
Can anybody use this?
It's just students. And that the reason being that we want it to be a service to students, because we reckon that most adults, faculty, and staff could have the resources to get to a local bike shop. And so we also want to support the local bike shops as well. We don't want to be taking business away from them. We're going to be running some ads in the Iowa State Daily, I think weekly, maybe on Wednesdays, so people can look out for that.
So how often do you work on bikes?
Twice a week. Kevin works on Mondays from 11 to 2. I work on Thursdays from 11 to 2.
So how long have you been doing this, Kevin?
I've been working on bikes for about 9 years at a local bike shop. And so I have quite a bit of experience fixing bikes.
I think this is going to be my 5th year as a mechanic.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things we're working on right now, too, is training other mechanics to come up behind us and take over the program from when we take off and we graduate. So,
do you guys have anything else you want to share with the listening audience?
Bring your bikes in.
If you're an Iowa State student, just students. So if you are a student or the parent or grandparent of a student and they have a bike that you got them, this would be a way for them to keep it safe.
Exactly. Thank you.
My name is Rebecca Brown. I am one of two AmeriCorps Vistas here teaching the Sustainapaloozoans about urban gardening. So we have a vermicomposting bin to show folks that they can do composting within their dorm or apartment or small house.
So what's all in the bin?
Worms and fruits and vegetables, so things like apple cores or the like random stuff in your refrigerator that you never got to. And
so things that instead of just throwing it in the garbage, you're going to compost it. And is it doable because they're putting in this in the house?
Yeah, you have to make sure, you know, you cover your food so that gnats and the smell doesn't get to it. Typically, as with any composting, aerobic composting especially, if it smells or your worms are escaping, you are doing something wrong. Vermicomposting is great because the worms eat really quickly and the resource plant can't burn food. It's too wet, so it just ends up in Boone's landfill. So why send something to the landfill when you can create compost for your plants or your neighbor's plants? So worms eat stuff and then they poop it out. And then that worm poop is also known as worm castings or vermicast. And so that gets added to the soil. You don't want to use vermicast as soil because your plants will shoot up and then die. It's like when you have that really dense energy drink and then you just collapse and fall asleep on the floor because you were so excited and then you just... It's definitely, you still need to have soil and the rest of the earth.
So what's all in here? Let's see.
Got some shredded paper. paper, and that's kind of the bedding for the worms. And it's also, I use it to keep gnats away and the smell down. As for what specifically is in here, we've got some corn cobs. There's some, you can see some worms in here.
The corn is sprouting.
This is interesting.
The corn is sprouting, so that's cool. But the worms are also eating it, so we'll see what happens first. And we've got some, I know I saw some apples in here, some apple cores. You can throw your, like, oh, your orange peels. So there's a couple of different methods of doing worm composting. You can do a quick worm composting where your worms will eat through everything, and then if you provide fresh food, they'll just kind of go on to the next. But there's another type, they'll like really digest everything, so you're only left with vermicast. You can get really complex with worm bins, and that's one of the more complex systems. There's more effort to it. So in that, you have three bins. The first bin is where the worms are, and they're currently eating rotting food. Also note that worms will only eat things that are rotting, so if they won't eat fresh food, like your fresh banana peel, it's gotta get brown. The second bin, the one that's on top of the first bin, that's where your fresh food is at. So when your worms are done with the first bin, they will crawl up into the second bin, and then they'll start eating that.
Should you put some dirt in there or something?
Yeah, you want to put a scoop of soil or a scoop of sand, because worms don't have teeth. You know, they have a gizzard, so they need like a grain of sand to help chew their food. It's one of those things that helps make a healthier bin. It's not necessary depending on the type of food you have. You know, if you have like apple seeds in there, like that's fine. A book that I haven't read yet, but I've heard is really good, is called Worms Eat My Garbage.
Yeah,
I forget the name of the author, but apparently it's a really good book.
But anybody can do this. Everybody has garbage.
Anybody can do this. Literally anybody. You don't even need a garden. You could have a friend who has a garden, or you could know someone who has a farm. So when your worms are done with their castings, you can give it to them. It's like, it's the simplest thing to do, and it can make the biggest difference.
Or even in a dorm.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. You gotta have healthy food, though. Healthy food. They won't eat grease or candy or potato chips.
So do not try to feed your worms any kind of meat product.
Right. No queso. No, like, greasy pork. No barbecue sauce. They could also just eat paper, or if you are just living on coffee grounds and you shred a lot of paper for some reason.
So you have a bin of coffee grounds and paper,
yeah,
and
or
your
tea
old
bags. They'll eat the coffee grounds, they'll eat the coffee filter. You know, you can, if you shred paper, or if you have a lot of paper you need to shred, if you keep getting those newspapers in the mail that you hate getting, use that. The ink is okay. Newspaper ink is soy-based, so that's solid.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
This is Cynthia McClure, and I'm with the organizer of the Sustainapalooza, and I'll let her explain it and tell you who she is and all that.
Thank you very much. I really can't take credit for Sustainapalooza. It's very much a student-driven event, but my name is Mary Rankin. I'm the Director of Sustainability here at Iowa State University, and I also am doing sustainability work for the City of Ames in a shared position, and we just finished the main events of the symposium on enhancing sustainability at Iowa State University today. And we have now kicked into our more sort of informal, fun celebration events that our student organization, the Green Umbrella, that I have the privilege of advising. But yet this is their baby. This is their vision, and they're making it happen. So we're just enjoying that. And we've had a couple of wonderful keynote lectures from Alan Wiseman, reminding us of our collective impact as a population on the planet. And also Mayor Frank County from Des Moines will be coming this evening talking about resiliency in cities.
And resilience in cities, what does that mean? Because you work with the City of Ames. So how does that apply to Ames?
Well, I think it offers us a sort of a vision and a perspective related to how do we adjust with the challenges that are coming our way, certainly related to environment and the economy, and also making sure we have a strong community. And it's not just necessarily, oftentimes sustainability implies that you're maintaining status quo. Resiliency implies that you persevere. And I think, anyway, and I think that says that we don't just react. We're very proactive to the challenges that come to us, and ensuring that we have strong communities and that they are resilient against the many challenges that will come their way.
Well, Ames is a college town, and we have quite a nice infrastructure here, but what would you recommend for some of the smaller communities in central Iowa that don't have the infrastructure or the budget for doing these things? What would you suggest for them?
Well, I think that when you have passion and when you have an interest, there are many ways that things can take place. And so I've been in the environmental field for a number of years and in a number of different organizations, state government, the gamut. And I can say that there's not an amazingly prolific and rich budget in any of those positions. But if you have the passion and you find those individuals that also have the passion, you can create, I think, very effective opportunities for dialogue, very effective opportunities for bringing people together to share vision, to collaborate, to see what resources you do have available, and then make the best use of them as possible. So what I would encourage small communities to do is look at forming, you know, maybe it's a working group, maybe it's a visioning group for resiliency in their community. And resiliency means so much more than I think what a lot of people think about when they hear like the word sustainability. A lot of people, I think, think about the environmental pieces. You know, what is our carbon footprint? How much waste are we producing? How much energy are we demanding? How much water are we using? Those sorts of things. And while that's an important piece of it, resiliency is so much more. And sustainability, actually, is so much more than that. And so I think to really have a strong community, it's more than just about considering the environmental pieces. It's looking at how engaged the community can be. It's in everyone finding a way to feel like they're making a difference and they're connected to their community and to the future of that community, and that they can feel empowered in moving forward in their decision-making process and some of the activities that they may participate in. So I would encourage small communities to look at bringing together, you know, your people that are passionate and finding ways to engage the community in increasing understanding, awareness, and involvement in making your community stronger. And that can be something as easy as getting everyone together to enjoy a meal of local produce, you know, sharing each other's vegetables from your garden. It can be, you know, that sort of base level, but it brings you around the fact that you're all a community and you work together and helps you understand the breadth and depth of what it takes to continue to keep your community strong.
So you're thinking like food security, create a community garden, carpooling, things like that, just getting people together to live a little simpler.
I think so. And to understand the connectiveness you have to each other. You know, we are not these independent, you know, functioning units. As much as we may think we are, we depend upon each other in so many ways. And where we will be in the future as a world, as a planet, as a community, as a society, depends upon the interconnectedness that we all can feel and that we all can embrace and that we can really treasure. And so, yes, I think that just getting people together to understand how connected you are to the future of your community, how very much you do have in common, and that can be simply from a vision standpoint. You know, you want safe drinking water, you want a safe community that, you know, your kids are growing up in, you want a vibrant community engagement system of events and activities. You want good education. You want a diverse education. You know, all those sorts of things. And you can find those pieces of connectivity through something like gardening, mm-hmm. through something like sitting down and enjoying a meal together. Even I think there's a lot of wonderful things that come out of a big community swap event, you know, where you all bring the things that you don't necessarily want. You don't put them in the landfill. You understand that there's somebody that could have a need. And, you know, you do those sorts of things. Those are all opportunities for us to meet each other, understand each other's challenges, and opportunities that will benefit us collectively.
Well, you said that you've done this in other communities, so in other organizations. Mm-hmm. But what do you think about Iowans in general? Do they do this well?
Well, I grew up in Iowa, and
a little bias going on. Okay.
I grew up on a farm, and I have never known more connection to where my food comes from, to the land, to the impact I have on a day-to-day basis than you know, growing up on a farm and being an Iowan. I will say that I think one of our biggest travesties, honestly, I have a love-hate relationship with technology, honestly. I think it allows us to be connected in so many amazing ways, and yet I think it also allows us to be disconnected to the things that sustain us and that we depend upon on a day-to-day basis. It allows us to be disconnected from our food. It allows us to be disconnected from our neighbors sometimes and our community. And so with that in mind, I think that, you know, I see more of that than I would like in Iowa, but I certainly see it everywhere. And I think that Iowans, they have a certain connection to their roots and their community and the world around them that you don't see everywhere across the U.S. I mean, you know, we're the breadbasket, right? So we automatically have that sort of connectivity. But Iowans are also very proud of our heritage. And so I think that I think we do a lot of things very well. I think with any community, there are things that, and with anyone, including myself, there are things that we can strive to do better and to be more active in. But I think we've got a lot of really dedicated and diversified initiatives going, a lot of groups rallying around things they feel very strongly about. And I think one of the joys I've seen in my lifetime is sort of a full circle effect with a lot of things, things going kind of crazy and then people coming back to growing their own food and cooking their own food, for example, from food security standpoint, and people coming back around to really looking at if they need particular purchases and how they can share something when it's at the end of its life rather than put it into the trash. So it's been interesting to me to see this full circle effect, and that's just not in Iowa. But I think with anywhere, we're doing some things really well. And we have opportunities.
So network with the people that you know and meet new friends and gain new knowledge.
I think that is a really great way of putting it. Much more succinct than what I was talking about. But yeah, exactly. You know, talk to one another, understand each other, find the connections, and then look for opportunities to, you know, rally and gather that energy. It can be really exhausting on your own. Yeah. And so rallying and gathering the energy and moving forward. And
so basically spring's coming, you know, time to get the family stuff together and maybe do a giant community swap meet.
I think that's great. Is people are going to be spring cleaning, and there's stuff that, gosh, people would want, you know. I've always been amazed. I recently moved into a different place and I found myself meticulously going through all of my things, you know, mortified by even the amount of things I had collected. And yet, it was so interesting to me because I am who I am. I wanted to find outlets for items if there was somebody that could benefit from them. And I've been just amazed at the number of different outlets and needs that are in our own community that we can help make a difference of. It's something as simple as something we were going to put into the trash. So it doesn't take a lot of money. It doesn't take a lot of resources necessarily. It just takes a little bit of time and some creativity. Thank you very much.
And just tell us your name again and what you do here at Iowa State.
Sure. Mary Rankin. I'm the Director of Sustainability at Iowa State University.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Becca Brown, here together with Ursula Rudenberg. We have been listening this morning to recordings of interviews from Sustainapalooza, which was held yesterday at the Memorial Union at Iowa State University. The music we just heard was Backstep Cindy, Purple Bamboo by Abigail Washburn.
At KHOI, we have a program segment that we do throughout the month called Community Service Appreciation, where we feature a nonprofit service organization each month. The people who conduct that program are Kay Puttock and Roxanne Thompson, and we really appreciate the work they're doing. In keeping with our featuring the Central Iowa chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, which was our featured organization, this February, we tuned into a play production, which is happening as this month comes to an end, which deals with mental illness.
The Story Theater Company, which takes its name from the fact that it brings together children from all over Story County to act and perform children's plays, has taken on a new venture. This is the production of a teen play with cast and crew made up from Story Theater Company children who are now teens.
KHOI reporter Susan Franson visited the rehearsal for it yesterday to meet the directors and learn about the play and interviewed some of the people involved. Let's listen in to what they said.
After I read the article by Julie Farrell in the Ames Tribune about the production by Story Theater Company of David and Lisa that will be opening this weekend, I was eager to interview its directors. The only way I could catch them was to attend a rehearsal at Zeke's, where the play will be performed. Zeke's is a former mechanics garage located on Lincoln Way next to Cabana, and not well suited for radio interviewing. It was such an experience that I'd like to invite you along as we search out a place to talk to each other.
There is a small room in back of that. There's like a green room.
Oh yeah, we can probably use the green room. That's fine.
I didn't think about it.
There's a lower ceiling. I'm here at the tech rehearsal for David and Lisa with the directors in the green room. Please introduce yourselves.
My name is Kyvan Kirk. I'm the co-director of David and Lisa, and right now I'm actually a senior in performing arts at Iowa State University.
I'm Kirsten Neighborhaus, and I'm student teaching at Ames Middle School right now, so that's my life outside of this.
Before you were a teacher, were you a drama major?
I was a performing arts major for one semester. That's it. I'm really involved with the theater department at Iowa State, and I love doing theater, but I also really love to teach. And so I do theater for fun, and I teach for my job.
What do you teach?
English, or literacy, at Ames Middle School, 7th grade.
So do you have any experience with people who have the conditions that David and Lisa have?
Actually, I do. I also work for ChildServe, and so there's a lot of parallels between some of the kids that I've worked with at ChildServe and some of the kids in the script, which is really, it's actually been really helpful because I can read some of the things the kids in the show are saying, and I've heard or seen similar things in my work experience, and so that's been really cool, a cool way to use that knowledge and experience.
Did that have anything to do with choosing the play?
My experience? No, I don't think so. I think Kyvan and I really just loved the characters in the show.
Out of all the plays that were possible, well, because mostly they wanted to do something with more mature content. And so out of all the plays we read, this was probably the most mature, because some of them were still pretty childish.
Have you been directing the children's theater for Story Theater?
This is the third project Kirsten and I have worked on together, and pretty much every time we do it, it's a co-director type situation.
It's very collaborative. We work really well on that aspect. Yeah. We're very good at throwing ideas off of each other and adding things to what each other has.
Our styles mix very well.
Yes, they do.
Were you friends before you became co-directors?
Actually, we were not friends before. No, but now we've been together for a long time.
It's been great.
Yeah.
So.
How did Story Theater get started? I see from the website there are lots of plays that you've done.
I believe it got started with some homeschooling families in the community who wanted to set up a theater program for their children, and then it expanded from there.
Yeah, I think it was one mom, actually, who had lots of interest because her kids were really interested, and so she just wanted to give her kids an opportunity to do what they wanted to do. So she went out of her way, she collaborated with a bunch of other moms who had the same idea, and so it started.
Yeah.
And this must be quite a while ago.
10, 12, maybe.
And I've seen some of your posters up at the Ames City Hall. Is that where you usually perform? Or?
Yes, it is. Ames City Auditorium. We have typically like 30 to 40 kids in mm-hmm. our shows, so we need the big space. Like, we can't do it here at Zeke because our casts are so large.
Then you must have pretty good audience to go with them, right?
Yeah, typically.
Yeah, lots of family members.
Yes.
Yeah, they love seeing the kids.
Yeah, bless their hearts, they come several times, too. Yeah.
So I noticed that David and Lisa looks like it has a pretty good size cast, too. Is that right?
Yeah, well, compared to the other shows, it's actually kind of small. It's like half the size of a normal show. Normally, we have anywhere from like 30 to 40. In this show, we have 15. Yeah, that was one of the ideas behind the play, too, was to give them a more intimate rehearsal process so they could get better feedback or more specific feedback for their acting. So.
I noticed that you're a company. And how does that differ from a theater group?
Well, I would say that's less of the actual company. That's more of just this project specifically, because the idea behind David and Lisa was to make sure that the kids understood all facets of a theater production and that they had a chance to dabble in each one. So all the actors on stage mm-hmm. are also part of a production team. So they're either doing sets, costumes, or props.
And those teams are all led by individuals who are not part of the cast.
Yeah.
So there's one person who's the head of each team who's not in the cast.
Yeah.
And typically for Story Theater Company, there are adults doing all of that, and the kids are just acting.
Yeah.
And then we have stage crew as well. So they have crew opportunities,
they don't come in until the last couple weeks normally, whereas this time all the kids were involved for the entire process. So.
Well, how did the kids get involved?
We advertise our auditions, we advertise our plays, and then they come out of the woodwork, they keep showing up.
So then the company isn't an ongoing company?
It is an ongoing company, it just normally operates a little bit different than it has for this show. And I think this show is actually taking the company in a better direction. You don't have adults, you know, shepherding kids on stage and telling them when to speak and whatnot. You have... you know, kids really figuring everything out for themselves. Those aren't bad things.
The kids that we have, acting, they love that and they learn so much from that.
And it may not be safe for them to do sets or props necessarily.
They're just their age. They can't handle this amount of stuff. And so typically when our kids turn a certain age, like 16 or 17, they kind of stop auditioning for other shows because Snow White and Willy Wonka, they don't tend to enjoy those as much as the younger kids. So we needed to give them something with more depth and more for them to really dig deep and learn from. So
what's the age range for this crew?
Our youngest is 13.
Mm-hmm. And she's actually doing costumes, so...
There's a 13-year-old in the cast as well.
Okay, yeah. So 13 to 18.
To 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how old are David and Lisa?
16 and... 15. I think Ben is 16 and Allison is 15?
Mm-hmm. David and Lisa, the characters are...
David and Lisa, the characters?
Are how old?
David, I think, is 16.
16 and then Lisa's 13, yeah.
So they're close enough to the real...
Exactly.
Yeah, they're very close. And that was another thing that was really cool about this script that when we were choosing it, we really liked that our actors are about the same age as the characters they're portraying.
And do they know anybody with these conditions?
I think they probably don't know people with such severe conditions, a lot of them, but I think they, you know, they have definitely met some people with things like, you know, autism or depression and stuff like that, but probably not...
For example, Lisa has a dissociative personality disorder.
Yeah.
Or multiple personalities.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure that...
They run into that every
day. Yeah, I don't think they run into that very often.
Yeah.
Or things like schizophrenia, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Or obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah, they probably know somebody with OCD.
But with that extreme of the condition.
I think... The eating disorders, they probably know people with eating disorders because they are in high school, and that's an unfortunate truth.
Do the other cast members have other kinds of disorders? What's the story?
But it is a story of friendship between these two kids, one with a severe OCD and then one with dissociative identity disorder. Yeah. And it's them... really coming to terms with themselves through connecting with each other and being in a safe place that the school provides for them. So it's just putting them in a group of people with issues that are similar to their own so they can figure them out with each other. So, and I think that's really what the story about is, connecting with other people to better yourself. So,
What's been the most challenging part of...
Personally?
Releasing control.
Yes, that's what I was going
to
say.
Because we're so used to doing like so much and the organization falls on us, whereas this time we have to trust the kids and we have to give kids the agency to do those things and the authority to make those decisions, and that's really scary. But
especially for type A personalities like myself, that's been the biggest struggle. Not that I don't trust them. They're all so capable and talented and creative and wonderful hard workers. But it's just the letting go of the I need to take care of all of this and like just letting them take care of it themselves. Yeah. Because that's the point of this production, is letting them do it and learn from it rather than having me standing over their shoulder going, no, do it this way, do it this way.
And it's really challenged us because we've always been taught that theater is this really collaborative art form, because normally we make so many decisions ourselves, but this time we were forced to let them, you know, help, which is the point. They've done incredible.
And it's been a steep learning curve for us as well as them, which is a great peril.
That's the most exciting part.
Yeah.
It is, because I feel knowing that and figuring out that theater is such a collaborative art form, like, it has allowed me, especially with these kids, to see the potential for theater and how much it can help and how much it can make a difference to these guys.
And for me, on the flip side, like, letting go of that control and letting them do it, I get so excited when I see them develop from, like, seeing them develop and grow as people and getting to know them and seeing their creative, just their creative spark and their growth. That's really exciting to me, to watch them and realize, oh, you really didn't need me anyways. I would have just gone in the way. So that's been really cool to me, learning that. And learning for myself that I just need to step back sometimes and let things happen.
Share the control.
Do you have anything to say to potential audience members?
Oh my gosh, please come see it. They worked so hard for this, and this is unprecedented in our area. These are local kids doing something together, learning about themselves, learning about theater.
I'm just so proud of them. The level of, like, professionalism they've attained. Like, obviously, they have moments where, you know, they are kids, but when the time comes to it, they just hit it. They step up their game, and they focus, and because of that focus, they've been able to do something really incredible.
Did they all really know what the play was about when they tried out?
That was one of our worries from the get-go, I think, was that it was a title that nobody recognized. Yeah. And so we had to really, Lori put in the script in the library so they could go read it. So I know some of them did go read it before they auditioned, but I think others didn't. And so it was interesting watching them figure out what it actually was, I guess.
If they didn't know then, they definitely know now.
Well, this was a movie several years ago, wasn't it?
In the 60s.
And I think they they made...
Brittany Murphy was in it, I believe, at one point.
Yeah, they made a remake in like the late 90s or like early 2000s. Yeah. I think that was actually sponsored by Oprah.
I have not watched either of them, though.
I haven't either, and I think that's probably a good thing.
I would imagine, as a director, it's really a good thing. I just wondered
if... Yeah, we tend to avoid it, because it just...
We did read the original book, though.
Yes, we did.
And that was actually very helpful to figure out some of the psychology behind what's going on.
Yeah, because it was actual psychologist's note. I mean, the play was based on a book, I guess, written by a psychologist in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And so David and Lisa are based on real people. So that book was really helpful and really interesting.
That's been interesting. And that's something that, you know, because we have kids who are dramaturgs, too. So they've been doing, you know, all the dramaturgical research, which is also exciting.
Which is also a completely new thing for Story Theater Company. We've never even had an adult dramaturg, so.
Would you try to do this again, this kind of a production?
Absolutely.
We hope we can. It's kind of a pilot, so.
We've learned a lot, and we think we can improve the next process if we do this kind of show again. But I think it's definitely worth doing, because it gives the kids such a feeling of ownership, and it holds them accountable, which is really good.
Yeah.
Well, I think it sounds like a wonderful play. When is it on? And tell us the fact.
Friday the 28th. It opens at 7 o'clock, and there's another show at 7 o'clock on March 1st, and then at 2 o'clock on March 2nd.
And just this weekend?
Only this weekend, yeah. Yep.
Only one weekend, and we only have a limited number of seats, so get here quick.
How many seats do you have, do you know?
108. We squeezed in as many as we could, so... Yeah. And we also had to take a section out because our cast is sitting in the audience because there's no backstage, which has also been an interesting thing to figure out. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's at Zeke's, and what's the address?
Okay.
It's at Zeke's at 3329 Lincoln Way.
We've just been talking with Kyvan Kirk and Kirsten Neighborhouse, directors of David and Lisa, Story Theater Company's first teen play, which has an all-teen cast and production crew. It will be performed at Zeke's, 3329 Lincoln Way, this weekend, February 28th and March 1st at 7 p.m., with a Sunday matinee on March 2nd at 2 p.m.
Listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here together with Becca Brown.
We just listened to an interview by KHOI reporter Susan Franson with the producers of the play David and Lisa, a teen production which will occur three times at Zeke's, which is located at 3329 Lincoln Way in the west side of Ames. Performances will be on Friday, February 28th, and Saturday, March 1st at 7 p.m. On Sunday, March 2nd, it will be performed at 2 p.m. The show is recommended for ages 13 and up.
We would like now to repeat an interview which we had with Deb Niehoff on Monday on Local Talk. Deb is the executive director of Central Iowa NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, and we spoke with her not only about her organization, which we're featuring this month, but also because we're working together with NAMI for a fundraiser for both KHOI and NAMI. And we would like to play the interview again to invite you again to come to our event and to find out about what's happening. Hi, Deb.
Good morning.
Welcome. Deb is the executive director of NAMI Central Iowa. NAMI stands for National Alliance for Mental Illness. We're featuring NAMI this month at KHOI in our Community Service Appreciation Program, so we're delighted to have you here with us. But you're also here for another reason, right, Deb?
I am. We will be co-hosting a trivia night on March 8th with KHOI, and we're really excited about doing this together. It's going to be Saturday, March 8th. Doors open at 6 o'clock, and trivia begins at 6:30. And we're going to have trivia at the Boys and Girls Club at 210 South 5th Street in Ames. And everyone is welcome. Businesses, organizations, clubs, group of friends, just come out for a night of fun.
This is a fundraiser for KHOI and NAMI. It's a partnership, right?
It is.
And yes. We'll be selling tables, and it'll be $100 a table. And each table will have up to 8 contestants.
Right.
And there'll also be prizes for the winners, and there'll be a gourmet dessert auction.
I'm looking forward to that.
People all over town are making desserts, including Susan here is going to make one. And Susan's a really good cook, so
And Ursula is going to make one, and she had a sample yesterday, so I can vouch for it. It's beautiful chocolate.
Turned out a Kugelhopf. Chocolate Kugelhopf. So, Deb, let's talk about NAMI for a minute. Could you give us a brief description of what NAMI does?
Sure. NAMI is a nonprofit, and our mission is to provide support and education and advocacy for individuals living with mental illness and for their family members.
This is a national organization?
It is. It's a national organization. We are one of over 1,000 local affiliates.
So tell us, how did NAMI get started here in Ames? When did it start?
It started over 30 years ago. It was actually a few parents, each of who had children with schizophrenia, who found each other and found out how important the support was of someone who understood what you were going through. And as they were supporting each other, they thought, why don't we open this up to more people? And it was about this same time that the National group got started. A group of women in Wisconsin were doing the same thing. So our local group and the national group kind of followed the same path, that as more people found out about it, found out about the support that was available, and then started talking to their legislators about poor conditions for individuals living with mental illness and trying to better their lives, things just grew from there.
So when these people originally got together, what were they doing together?
Well, I wasn't there, so as far as I know, they were sharing their own stories and challenges and giving just individual support, but then they would also bring in speakers. They would bring in people, psychologists or people from the university, anyone that could give them more information and education about the illnesses themselves.
Mm-hmm. And NAMI is a nonprofit, 501c3, like KHOI, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. So the Central Iowa chapter, that's managed locally?
Yes, yes. Pretty much we're involved with individuals in Story County, but people come from distances because there is not a NAMI in every county here. And so when we offer our educational programs, we have people come from quite a range of places, especially north.
So if there's somebody listening who has mental illness and needs help, what would you say to them?
Well, if they need help in terms of diagnosis, I would say that they should contact, they can start with their family doctor if they feel most comfortable and explain what they're experiencing, and the family doctor may refer them to a psychiatrist or the community mental health center. If it's someone that just needs some support and some people who understand what they're going through, I would invite them to come to our Mental Health Wellness Center. We have one that's open on weekday afternoons, and it's a place where we offer programming, whole health programming for mental health recovery.
And where are you located?
We are downtown in the Ames Historical Society building, which is 416 Douglas. And we're upstairs in Suite 305.
And if somebody comes there, what can they expect?
They can expect a warm welcome. The people who come there regularly are just always really, really welcoming of new people. They can just come in and look around, meet people, pick up a calendar of the month's events, if that's all they want to do. Or they can sit down, have a cup of tea, and participate in whatever's going on that day. Different days, different activities. We have art groups, writing groups, a support group every Thursday, a lot of different activities, exercise. We have chair yoga and Pilates groups.
Mm-hmm. Does NAMI advocate for improvement in mental health? And
the national group definitely does. They have lobbyists, and they have the president's ear, really.
He's allocated quite a bit of funds towards
it. He has. Mm-hmm. He has. He gets it. Yeah. And mm-hmm. and we're very, very thankful for that. Here we do as much advocating as we can. Like, we were at the legislative wake up this past week for the League of Women Voters. We do what we can. I mean, we can talk to legislators and we can tell them our stories, mm-hmm. which is what NAMI particularly encourages us to do.
Well, Deb, funds raised by Ames Trivia Night. What is the money going to be used for?
Well, the money will be used for our ongoing expenses to provide our programs. Like I said, we have educational classes, we have the Mental Health Wellness Center, we have support groups, and we really, really strongly feel we don't want any hoops people have to jump through in order to get help. We're the one place that people can come and get started right away. But we have rent to pay and
That's
utilities
right.
to pay, and these kinds of fundraisers help us to be able to keep things going.
KHOI will use the money to operate the station. We also have rent to pay and astronomical electrical bills. That's what the money here will be used for, was the operating expenses for KHOI. And so let's talk Trivia Night again
okay.
real quickly, so we make sure that everybody feels invited. We are inviting you, the listener, to join us on March 8th. The door opens at 6 p.m. Trivia begins at 6:30. Bring your brains, bring your friends. One table costs $100, and it can be divided between up to 8 players. And this will be at the Boys and Girls Club, which is 210 South 5th Street, which is where the old bowling alley used to be, right? Down on near Duff?
I went to a trivia night a few years ago, and it was a blast.
It's a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun,
yeah,
yes.
This is a great way to shake off the cold, to, you know, get together with some friends. We do encourage you to dress up. In fact, there will be a prize for the team with the best name and the best costumes. Is that right, Deb? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You will get your own table. We invite you to bring dinner. I hear some people bring theme dinners, which is really awesome. And there will be gourmet desserts. There will be an auction for the gourmet desserts.
Mm-hmm.
We will be asking, I think, around 10 or 12 rounds of trivia questions. And the team that wins gets a $200 prize plus a free table at the next Ames Trivia Night. It's going to be a night of fun, as well as fundraising.
It really will. We had one last year, and we were just all blown away at how much everyone enjoyed it. I mean, there are times when you feel really dumb because you just don't even know what the question means, much less the answer, and then times that you can feel very smart because some little bit of trivia you knew and no one else did.
Well, the other thing that's fun is when you are on a team, you really enjoy the knowledge of your teammates, mm-hmm. and you don't have to feel, oh, I can't answer anything. Oh, I can't answer this question, because you can figure it out together. Mm-hmm. And I think team trivia is really a different kind of game than the individual trivia that you usually play.
We were asked to do a bunch of questions about radio, so we contribute a lot of radio trivia.
Okay.
To register online, there is a website, getmeregistered.com/AmesTrivia. We're also going to put a link on our homepage at khoyfm.org to register online. Also, you can register by phone, 515-292-2878, 515-292-2878. That's the number here at the radio station. So please give us a call, register. We really, really want you to join us. We also need the money, and this is an enjoyable way to do this. We're getting better and better at raising money, but we're also getting better at making sure we have fun.
Been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today we brought you some interviews with sustainability educators of Sustainapalooza, which was held at ISU on Tuesday. That report was produced by Cynthia McClure.
Then Susan Franson provided some interviews with the folks putting on David and Lisa, a teen production about the topic of mental illness, which will be playing this weekend.
Then we aired an interview with Deb Niehoff, Executive Director for NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness. Don't forget to come to Ames Trivia Night, a fundraiser for both them and KHOI.
Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. The music you heard included Backstep Cindy, Purple Bamboo by Abigail Washburn.
Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. And you can also see their listings of past guests and resource contact information.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. Your participation as an audience makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.